This is the Norris Group's Real Estate Investor Radio Show, the award-winning show dedicated to thought leaders shaping the real estate industry and local experts revealing their insider tips to succeed in an ever-changing real estate market. Hosted by author, investor, and hard money lender, Bruce Norris.
On Friday, October 21st, the Norris Group proudly presents its 9th annual award-winning black tie event, I Survived Real Estate. An incredible lineup of industry experts will join Bruce Norris to discuss perplexing industry trends, head-scratching legislation, and opportunities emerging for real estate professionals. Proceeds for the event benefit Make-A-Wish and St. Jude Children's Research Hospital. This event is not possible without the generous help of the following platinum partners: Housing Wire, Property Radar, the Apartment Owners Association, the San Diego Creative Real Estate Investors Association, Invest Club for Women, MVT Productions, the San Jose Real Estate Investors Association, Inland Empire Real Estate Investment Club, Think Realty, and White House Catering. Visit isurvivedrealestate.com for event information and tickets.
Hey everybody, it's Aaron Norris filling it in as Bruce is actually back in Washington, D.C. today talking to government officials about what we're going to be talking about today, financing. We've got Suzanne Dawn Livingston. She is the Executive Vice President of Sales and Marketing of Residential Wholesale Mortgage, Inc. RWMI is a privately held company which was founded with her husband, Brad, in 1994, and it was recognized by the San Diego Union-Tribune as a top workplace in 2015 and was also named one of the top privately held mortgage companies in San Diego by the San Diego Business Journal. She currently serves on the board of the California Mortgage Bankers Association, is why I'm super excited to talk to her today. And she's been in the industry for some time. How long have you been in the industry, Suzanne?
Oh, gosh. Thanks for having me, Aaron. Since 1986, when interest rates had topped out at a beautiful 11.75%.
Oh, double-digit interest rates. Remember that?
I do.
So Dodd-Frank rolls out in, what, 2010, right?
Correct.
Where are we now, and why so long? Are we finished yet?
I think we are seeing the light through the tunnel. We have probably 10% of the rules and regulations to go, but we have successfully lasted this long. So I anticipate just moving forward with the new application, which is our next little molehill to implement through our LOS systems and various software that are integrated with our systems.
So is that one of the last things that has to happen, is just the new application that's going to roll out?
Well, one would hope so, but I think the way that the CFPB is delving into all the different regulations, there, you know, there could be some tightening, there could be some adjustments made, but a lot hinges on whether the GOP wins the nomination or whether the Democrats. That will be very instrumental in the direction of future law and rulemaking.
It was sort of interesting because Dodd-Frank was rather bipartisan when it first came out, and do you sort of get the sense it's gotten a lot more political as we've gone along?
Yes. There's been several, I think in the House that they are still trying to bring some reform to the CFPB. Nothing formally has been adopted yet, and again, I think we're waiting for elections. The GOP wants to see an overhaul of it the way that it exists today, and with the recent PHH ruling, there's a firm belief that some believe that it's a bit overreaching and perhaps unconstitutional in the way it's being run today.
Yeah, a little left to their own devices as far as being able to regulate and levy fines. And the PHH, if you hadn't heard about that, I actually covered it in the video last week, is a lawsuit. Are they the first ones to actually sue the CFPB for a fine that was levied, and it's going to court?
Yeah, and I think there are several cases pending now.
Okay.
And the big controversy is some want to see the CFPB under congressional oversight as opposed to the sort of autocratic structure that it is now. And there is some bipartisan support to this. So I think that would be a much more balanced approach as it is today, because it has grown in terms of numbers. The federal agencies have increased by some as high as 40% since 2010, and it's certainly increased the regulation on business owners and their day-to-day functions.
Okay. Well, you've been in the industry a long time. If you had to give this particular, the CFPB, a grade from A to F, what would you give it? How has it done?
I think that the intention originally post 2008, we had a lot of, you know, understandably a lot of disappointed people. People lost their homes. It was a terrible, you know, downturn in the economy. And some regulation and some that has come out has been very positive. I mean, we've got a national NMLS licensing system. You know, parts of that are very good. The fact that appraisals now are a little bit more regulated. But in terms of the broad oversight on loan officer compensation, their implementation on their audits, I know it's put a lot of stress on companies that they feel it's more of a taxing authority, somebody looking to support their employment and keep their job afloat because they have to make findings and they have to issue.
And it's gotten a little bit more expensive to be in the business, has it not?
Yes. I didn't have a compliance department 8 years ago, and not only do we have a compliance department, we have extra people for disclosures in order to, you know, keep up with TRID. And it just seems that our software, everything has to be more complex to do the reporting that is really demanded from all the regulations.
And the CMBA, it seems like as smaller companies would have a very difficult time keeping up with all those changes. So has the organization seen maybe a shrinkage in the very small shops?
I think certainly some of the brokerage shops and smaller mortgage bankers, if they did not have a good cash position in 2008, some of my friends lost their warehouse lines of credit, whether that would have been a loan that came back to them and they could only buy back, you know, three or four loans as opposed to being a very large bank. They had to either shut their doors or come merge with a platform like our company. So in 2008, you know, it was either grow or perish. And unfortunately, there were some smaller players that either got out of the business entirely or were forced to merge with somebody bigger.
Well, you know, I don't know if you can assign it all to some of the changes in the downturn, but homeownership is currently at a multi-decade low. Job well done. Was that an unintended consequence of all the regulation or just demographics? You know, the millennials not getting off mom and dad's couch. What do you think?
Oh, there's a lot of factors there. Aaron, you've got 2008 confidence when people, you know, owned their homes and then they were upside down. I think the millennials who saw parents go through that, certainly they're like, maybe I don't want to buy that. It may not be a good thing because they saw, you know, they saw the stress that it brought on their parents. Lack of jobs for kids coming out of college and slower employment all around. You know, if you don't have the good jobs, coupled with high prices, especially in California, it's not inexpensive to buy a property in San Diego. I think we're, you know, at an average price of like $500,000 for a first-time home buyer with student debt, you know.
Yep.
Not a high-paying job. You know, we are losing, you know, some of those buyers. So as a industry, we are really focused on educating those first-time home buyers, educating mom and dad and grandparents that there are great programs out there that can get these first-time home buyers, and or they may enter as investors. Maybe the investment properties are penciled better for first-time home buyers. So, you know, we really need to look at the programs that are available today.
That's very funny. I just caught what you just said. You're educating mom, dad, and grandma and grandpa about getting millennials financing. Did I miss that, or is that what you said?
I think that the obvious, you know, if grandparents are fortunate to be passing on money to other, you know, their successor family generations, whether it be through gift, you know, that gift fund can be used 100% as a down payment for a millennial or for their own kids. So in terms of, you know, financial planning, I think the financial planners are starting to look at this and to, you know, educate people on, you know, how we can, you know, basically leave a legacy for our children.
You know, and I'm not a millennial. I'm a Gen Xer. And some of my best friends just have no desire to own. So I think that's a really interesting marketing strategy and very appropriate. My best friend just bought a home and, you know, it was thanks to a family gift member that made that possible, lives in LA. So that down payment was definitely necessary, or that would have made it very onerous. Do you see any loan programs coming out or any policy changes that are going to make, especially in California, first-time home ownership easier?
We are really trying. Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae have actually done an excellent job in relaxing some of their overlays. So an overlay would just be just what it says. I mean, something that makes it hinders homeownership as opposed to helping it. So Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae are helping. And then I think that the jumbo investors, who obviously work independently of Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae guidelines, are also trying to go along that line. So whether it be, you know, Fannie Mae, a non-occupant co-mortgage or income was limited to Freddie Mac. Now you've got Fannie and Freddie doing that. So trends like that have happened. How about multiple finance properties? They were much more strict on that, and now they're up to 10. So if we can see more of that, reserve requirements for the jumbos are still very, very tricky. You have to watch those overlays. Certainly the seasoning requirements for short sales and foreclosures, we're still seeing a lot of that in our office and trying to navigate our borrowers, you know, in a roadway to success there while they are in that waiting period if they're not going, you know, FHA or...
Has that changed at all? Is it 3 years for short sale and 7 for foreclosure?
Kenya, you're quoting me, and I'm out of it. I think it's like 4 and 7.
Okay.
But I believe FHA is 2.
Oh.
So they're a little more lenient if that works for a borrower. But you also saw the down payment requirement. You know, FHA was always the leader on that at 3.5%. And then you saw the GSEs come in with the 3%. And then we can't forget about our veterans. We really want our veterans to take advantage of 100% financing for our veteran community that's out there, and the fact that, you know, there is no loan cap on that veteran loan. If it does go above the maximum allowable, they just put in 25% of the difference. And we've had a lot of success, especially in San Diego County, with our veteran community. So that's another underutilized program. You'd be surprised how many veterans are out there that just have never used their entitlement.
That's too bad. And the VA program has been one of the best performing even during the downturn. We always like to bring that up when we're talking about the foreclosure crisis, that it still remained, you know, 100% financing. It was a solid program and did not experience what some of the other GSEs did as far as foreclosures. Is there anything missing as far as lending programs that you would like to see in the mortgage industry in general that would get them excited and maybe loan a lot more money?
Well, I would like to see certainly Safe Harbor kind of loosen up a little bit. I think that in our market down here in San Diego County, we do have a fair amount of jumbo product, and that 43% back-end debt ratio for our self-employed individuals who have significant savings, and even post-closing, they could, in many cases, they could pay off their loan.
Mm-hmm.
For them not to be able to get a loan as easily as they could is a little disheartening. I'm a big fan of interest only. I think that there is a reason and a place for that. So as long as mortgage professionals are giving customers choices and explaining when that is appropriate, I think that that's also an excellent product. I think we already have I don't think I decreased down payments on FHA or Fannie Freddie right now. I think those are excellent options, especially since that those down payments can often be gifts.
Mm-hmm.
So... and the reserve requirements are very reasonable, good credit certainly, but I think we have a lot of options right now.
All right. Well, naturally led me right into non-owner occupied. Are you seeing, you said up to 10, notoriously anything over 4 was extremely painful.
Correct.
Have you seen that get any better?
Well, the new underwriting for the income on investment properties is different, and there are stricter reserve requirements. The more properties that you have, they have relaxed the loan-to-value requirements a little bit, where 75% is still the best pricing,
mm-hmm.
but you can go 80, and there are some even out there at 15% down.
Mm-hmm.
I always encourage our borrowers to go 75%, though, if they can. But investment, just from a risk standpoint, is certainly at a higher risk than owner-occupied properties. So I think they'll always continue to be err on the side of caution there.
Okay, yeah. I tried to do a refi earlier this year, and it was so extremely painful. I was just doing a rate change. I wasn't changing the term. I had bought, you know, 3 or 4 years ago, was in a great position, and they made it so painful, I just eventually gave up. I just couldn't do it anymore. I'm like, this is taking too long.
Right. We spent a lot of time with our loan officers training them how to set expectations. You under promise and over deliver. So when people ask me, well, how quickly can you get the loan done? I said, well, how quickly can you get me back this long list I'm going to give you?
You know, and I'm a hard money lender. So, you know, I'm pretty on top of things. And one of the interesting things was the technology was a factor. So we sort of had this go-between system that I was going in trying to sign paperwork, and they kept on uploading the wrong paperwork. And I was like, guys, these aren't my loan docs. It's got my name on it, but the numbers are all wrong. They're like, oh, just sign it anyway. I'm all, no, I'm not really interested in signing numbers that are wrong. So anyway, let's talk about overlays a little bit. Which way does it come? Does it come the government overlays, or is it private companies that are overlaying their own, rules to make sure that they're compliant now and possibly in the future with Dodd-Frank continuing to roll things out? Does it go both ways?
Well, in terms of overlays, every company is, at will to create their own overlays based on what they perceive as risk. So you may have an institutional bank. I mean, Wells overlays are certainly different than Chase's. And then we're a direct seller servicer to Freddie and Fannie as well. And we like to keep the overlays as slight as possible at some level. The, investment properties, certain ones do carry, our overlays even within our company. So those all vary.
Okay. I'm going to switch gears and go a little bit to California, a little bit more focused there. Affordability, that's really become an issue. What is the industry out in California talking about that? Do you think the affordability is going to stall sales in the coming few years?
I don't know if we're going to see a change in more co-borrowers in order to get around that. Maybe looking at multi-family, where you have income from the property coming in to offset mortgage payment on an owner-occupied basis. Affordable housing is a big problem in San Diego and Orange counties for first-time homebuyers. And maybe they are going to have to wait. Millennials are renting. They're happy. They're switching jobs maybe every, 3 years or so. They're not settling down quite yet. Many are waiting longer to get married. So maybe it's going to require double income.
And is the mortgage industry pretty excited about maybe in the next 10 years at some point, maybe they're stalling, but at some point we were hoping that they'll become family units and starting families and will want something more than a rental. Is that sort of the conversation that's going on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, all the population expansion, and when you read that, I mean, it's sometime this population over the next 5 to 10 years, they've got to enter the marketplace. So there will be another big bubble at that time. So it's just a question of when, right?
Right. What does the mortgage industry think of the GSEs? Do you guys think that they're going away, changing, going to merge and form a new entity?
I don't think the GSEs can go away. I think with the government basically buying 95% of our product today, when they went into receivership, 9 years ago, it was written in their in their bylaws, what government could go into receivership, but there was never anything written where they could go back to privatization. So the GSE reform again, I think there's been some reform, pushing towards more reasonable. The profits of the GSEs too. And this is something that has come up already on the Hill. We've already gotten out of the big hole, and we had so much cash reserves in the GSEs that they wanted to take money and build roads. And I know the MBA, California MBA, backed it as well. There was a big push. No, don't take that money. That's for homeowners. So until we go through elections and see who is going to be in power, nothing is going to happen quickly. The little that I know about politics, but what I have learned, it takes, at least 5 years to kind of switch that big boat, even if you do want to reform it. So I think we're going to see some changing, some updates, some reform, but it'll happen very slowly.
Oh, the election. So
isn't that fun?
Yeah, we're only about a month out. I mean, is there sort of like an plan A, plan B route, depending on who gets elected? Or, is it just the clarity of moving forward? I don't think both have spent a lot of time, from what I've read, focused on housing and affordability. Any thoughts on either way, if the community's concerned?
Concerned about affordability of housing?
No, whoever becomes president.
I think that the consensus is if we get more of the same, if the Democrats stay in power. They already have Frank Dodd in place. They're implementing that. They've geared it up. as opposed to if the, you know, Republicans gain control, they may shake it up a bit, and they're not going to, you know, get rid of and make drastic changes, but they will evaluate. Everybody wants to make sure that there is oversight, that it's more reasonable, I think, from a GOP perspective.
Mm-hmm. Understand. Okay. I think David Stevens, the Mortgage Bankers Associate president, recently came out saying lenders need clear, consistent, and reasonable interpretations of the rules in order to be able to best serve their borrowers and contribute to a smoothly functioning real estate market. That's Bill Cosgrove. He was chair a few years ago. He was on our panel at iSurvive Real Estate, also said, you know, the penalty phase is still happening. Once the banks stop getting sued and paying all these fines, you know, maybe more private money would enter the system. But we've already talked about the GSEs being 95% of that market. Do you think that's really the problem? And if, you know, the penalty phase is over and that there's absolute clarity and Dodd-Frank is through the system, will more private money come in, you think?
Well, I think interest rates are at an all-time low. And as those interest rates come up, I think it will be more attractive for investors to get off the sideline and get back into the marketplace.
Okay.
So there's a balance between, you know, the yield on interest rates. And in terms of, you know, in terms of the other side, you know, it's a very interesting, you know, world we live in today.
All right. Fair enough.
Yeah. You kind of stumped me on that a bit.
That's all right. Well, final topic. We only got about 30 seconds left. Technology. Is technology changing the mortgage industry? How are smaller and medium-sized banks dealing with all the changes?
Oh, I love technology. It's my favorite thing. It's completely turning it upside down, in my opinion. I think that, you know, when Zillow started, people were just like, really? I'm going to put a property in there and be able to see how much my house is worth. And it's evolved into so much more than that today, from internet marketing leads to, you know, when that 25% of the people were going online prior to buying a home, now you've got 90%. Our company is involved in a consumer direct platform, and there are people that are willing to do everything online today. So in order to keep up with that, we have the, you know, online loan applications, the mobile apps to give instant statusing, the loan origination software that's all tied into that so that everybody is notified, whether it's an agent, a listing agent, buyer's agent, you know, loan officer, and borrower, everybody's on the same channel. It's a question of, it's going to blend our cultures from boots on the ground,
mm-hmm.
you know, to straight internet lending. And where that is going to balance out, I think we'll always need a traditional format, to be honest, because an internet platform can't really take time to help that difficult borrower who may need credit fixing. They may need, you know, significant help and a roadmap to get them approval. They're not quite there, but there will be a section of the population that will just cookie cutter borrowers, get them in, get them out.
Agreed. Well,
you know,
Suzanne, I knew this was going to happen. 22 minutes goes so quickly. Thank you so much for your time. And just real quick,
thanks for having me.
If somebody wants to get a hold of you, what's the company website?
It's RWM, like Mary, loans.com.
Thank you so much, Suzanne.
Okay. Thanks a lot. Have a great day, Aaron.
You too.
The Norris Group would like to thank its gold sponsors for supporting I Survived Real Estate, Auction.com, Coachella Valley Real Estate Investors Association, Coldwell Banker Town & Country, Elite Auctions, In A Day Development, Inland Valley Association of Realtors, Jennifer Buys Houses, Keller Williams Corona, Keystone CPA, Las Brisas Escrow, LA Green Designs, LA South Rhea, New Western, North San Diego Real Estate Investors, Northern California Real Estate Investors Association, Orange County Investment Club, Orange County Building Industry Association, Pacific Premier Bank, Pasadena Phoebe, Pilot Limousine, Real Wealth Network, Realty 411 Magazine, Realty Executives Inland Empire, Rick and Leanne Rossiter, Sunoco Corporation, South Orange County Real Estate Club, Spinnaker Loans, UDirect IRA Services, Weston South Coast Plaza, Wholesale Capital Corporation, Wilson Investment Properties, Inc.
For more information on hard money loans and upcoming events with the Norris Group, check out thenorrisgroup.com. For information on passive investing with trust deeds, visit tngtrustdeeds.com.